Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy on KFI is provided by DSL Extreme at dslextreme.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Sunday, November 12th, 2006 on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show number 300.
November 12th, 2006.
KFI is a talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 11:07. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Lisa. Good morning, everyone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. Yeah, here we go. This is time to talk tech as we do every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. And tech means everything, you know, with a chip in it, everything modern and new and hip and happening, not just computers, not just Windows, Mac, Linux, the internet, MP3 players, cell phones, you bet, camcorders. Talk a little bit about my new Dash cell phone in a little bit. This is my new favorite cell phone. T-Mobile does it, but it comes from a company called HTC that I think is doing the best smartphones out there. I'll talk about that in a bit. Home theater. Anything with a chip in it, except I'm not an expert on some things with chips in them, like your car, like your microwave, the dishwasher, no. But, you know, computer-type stuff. 1-800... This is the phone number that's coming at you right now. I get it every once in a while. Somebody will send me an email or call me and say, you never say the phone number on the show. I say it all the time, but maybe it's just you don't hear it. It's 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. Sometimes I just kind of, maybe I just rattle it off too fast and you don't get that that's a phone number. It sounds like, I don't know. But anyway, I know I say it at least four times an hour. 1-800, this is the third time this hour, 1-800-520-1KFI. Why do I say it so much? Because it's a talk show. And that doesn't mean me gabbing at you. It means us talking together about technology. It's no fun for me doing it by myself. I love to hear from you. Did you hear, this was, I think President Bush talking this week. It was right after the Rumsfeld resignation. And he gave a little plug for Dell. Did you hear that? No, I don't. He says no, it was a stumble. Let me play a little bit of it for you. You tell me if this is a stumble or he's giving a plug. This is from this is a recording direct from CNN.
And it's you know, it's tough in a time of war when people see carnage on their Dell television screens. The amazing.
Their Dell television screens. Am I wrong?
No question, Iraq had something to do with it.
Let me play it again.
And it's you know, it's tough in a time of war when people see carnage on their Dell television screens.
That's a plug for Dell. I gotta be. I think the people said, "Oh no, President Bush was started to say Dellavision." You know, he misspoke Dell, and so he stopped Dell. I mean television. But it doesn't sound like that. I don't know. It sounds pretty clearly Dell televisions. I mean, I could be nuts.
Screens the amazing. Screens the amazing.
Let's go back here.
Screens the amazing. Screens the amazing.
Hold on. Say it for me. Say it for me, Mr. President.
No question, Iraq had something to do with it.
Yeah.
And it's you know, it's tough in a time of war when people see carnage on their Dell television screen.
Now, the reason there's some credence to the fact that he might have said Dell televisions is, A, Dell does make televisions, and B, Michael Dell, who is the owner and president and chief of Dell, see, that's his name, Dell, in fact, is a big Bush supporter. They live they're in Austin. And has always been a supporter of President Bush. Big campaign contributions. I think it can't have been intentional, but I do think it may not have been a complete accident either. It may have been in his mind. Maybe he was talking to Michael Dell that, you know, that day. You can make a lot out of it for, and probably no point. But I just think it's a nice plug. The plasma's in the mail, Mr. President. What other stories? Well, I mentioned yesterday there are we're finally getting close now to Windows Vista, and we're all waiting to see how secure Vista will be. There's no question; it's pretty. the agreement from experts, and if you really want to hear the details, more techie than probably we should do on this show, we've got a podcast coming up on Thursday with Steve Gibson, who you heard last week talking about security. Last week he was saying, just wait, don't get Vista. But there is a way to go with Vista. I think I agree with his initial advice. Waiting is prudent, sensible. But let's say you want to be secure. Can you be secure with Vista? Well, it turns out, yes, you can, if you're willing, and this is always the case, to sacrifice compatibility. Microsoft's problem, it's a good problem to have, is that they are so successful, they are used so widely, there are so many hundreds of thousands of programs written to work with Windows, that it is kind of hard for them to make a big change. So essentially, the way XP runs is not so very different from the way Windows 95, even Windows 3.1 ran. And in those days, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, security wasn't the same problem it is today. So security wasn't built into those early versions of Windows. In order to maintain compatibility with software written for those early versions, Microsoft has to give programs access to parts of the operating system it shouldn't be. That's the fundamental problem. Programs are too powerful. They're given too much power by the operating system. And which means a malicious program can modify the operating system, can modify key system files, can get into your system in ways that it shouldn't be allowed to. The problem is, years ago, Microsoft said that's okay, because it was okay. And lots of programs were written, I'll give you a good example, the antivirus programs were written to make modifications on the system that are dangerous if a malicious program does them. So in Windows Vista, the 32-bit version, the common version, the version you'll see on hardware when you buy it in most cases, in order to preserve compatibility with older programs, they continue to give those programs the kind of low-level access they shouldn't be getting. Which is why Steve Gibson and others are saying, stand back, because Vista's not going to be any safer than XP. They've added a lot of stuff, but fundamentally, they're letting programs do stuff they shouldn't be allowed to do. That's not true of the 64-bit version, and that's where it gets interesting. There are two versions of Vista. There's one for 32-bit hardware and one for 64-bit hardware. The number of bits is the size of the data, the kind of basic data chunk that a processor can handle. Most of our processors are 32-bit. However, there are some 64-bit processors, the Xeons, the Semprons, the Opterons, the Athlon 64s. These are 64-bit processors that handle chunks of data 8 bytes at a time. 64 bits at a time. Now, these 64-bit processors are not widely used yet on desktops. So Microsoft made an interesting decision, an interesting choice, and you'll hear more about this on the podcast if you listen to Security Now this coming Thursday. But they made the choice that, okay, we're going to preserve compatibility on our most common version of Vista, the 32-bit. But because when we move to 64-bit, everything has to be rewritten. All the drivers, all the low-level stuff has to be rewritten. We're going to take a chance, and we're going to make 64-bit less compatible, but more secure. We're going to block programs from doing the kinds of things they're used to doing in Windows 95, 98, ME, and XP, and Vista 32-bit. We're not going to let them do those things. Now, you might have heard there was a roar of protest from companies like Symantec, who said, wait a minute, we can't, the security company said, we can't make any changes to the 64-bit operating system. That's right, that's good. You won't, Symantec may not like it because you won't need them on the 64-bit platform. Microsoft said, Symantec, McAfee, all you others, you can modify the 32-bit kernel. We're not going to prevent you from doing that. But on the 64-bit version, we're going to keep you from doing that. And by doing that, they're going to prevent bad guys from doing the same. And this is good. This is a good choice. So it turns out there is a secure version of Vista. There is a version of Vista that experts believe will be very safe, much more safe. That's the good news. The bad news is a lot of your software won't work. A lot of your hardware may not work. Microsoft is not touting it for home use because they know people are going to scream bloody murder when their printer, their scanner, their software doesn't work. It's much less compatible, but there's always been that trade-off. It's one of the reasons Apple's been more secure is because they've been willing to make that trade-off. They're a smaller market. They don't care. They've been willing to cut off users of the old operating systems and the old hardware. Microsoft's been much more reluctant to do that, but they've made that step with 64-bit. So what does that mean? Well, going forward, it might mean if you're, it's worth waiting because it's going to take a while for all of these incompatibilities to work themselves out. But watch carefully, and I'll certainly be talking about that over the next 6 months to a year. But watch carefully because I think it will happen that stuff, the incompatibilities will be worked out. If you buy a new machine, a 64-bit machine, and you'll have to probably buy a new machine, and you buy 64-bit Windows, suddenly you'll have a secure operating system that's more reliable, faster, more robust. This may be the hope for 64. And Microsoft may be, Bill Gates is in the back of his head maybe thinking, well, this is the future. We're going to preserve compatibility right now, but next year, the year after, we're going to start pushing people towards that 64-bit future. That makes sense. It's 11:17. It's time to go to the phones. I want to give you a chance to talk about that. Talk about President Bush. Did he plug Dell? Or anything that's on your mind. 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Beholden to no one. John and Ken, tomorrow, 3 to 7.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Let's say hi to Andy in Anaheim. Hello, Andy. Welcome to KFI. Hey, Andy.
Hey.
Oh, he hung up. He hung up on me. All right, let's try Jerome. Hello, Jerome. Oh, wait a minute. We talked to Jerome yesterday. You're back, huh?
I'm back already, Leo.
What's the problem now, Jerome?
Well, it's actually a follow-up to what we talked about yesterday. Now, you said my two options were to either reload Windows, or if I knew how to, mess around up in there, I could fix that problem with the, because of the two antivirus programs on the computer at the same time.
Yeah, let me just fill people in who missed yesterday. You ran an antivirus on top of an antivirus. The one antivirus found the other antivirus, disinfected it, quote. Then the other antivirus saw that the other first antivirus was modifying system files, so they got in a fight. Windows basically crashed, and you're now stuck with a non-booting machine. Well, a machine that boots and reboots every 5 seconds.
Because as far as reloading Windows, I could do that, but the problem is somebody gave me the computer.
So you don't have a disk.
So like my graphics card and my modem and some other things, the person didn't keep the CD, so I don't have...
You don't need those because you can...
I can't reload,
You can download those, Jerome, but the real question is, do you have a Windows disk? Do you have an install disk?
Say that again?
Do you have an install disk?
No, the person who I got the computer from, they just lost all that stuff.
Okay, only way, Jerome, to fix this, you have to, as I said, two choices. You could reinstall Windows. Okay, you don't have an install disk. Or you could repair Windows, but you need an install disk to repair it. You cannot repair Windows without a Windows installer disk. Because what I was going to recommend you do is run the system recovery tools. But that's not going to work unless you have an original Windows disk. So I think really your best option is you got this for free. You're going to have to spend some money now. You've screwed it up. It's not your fault. I don't want to blame you, but you're going to have to go out and buy a copy of Windows and install fresh. Lisa, Newport Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Leo. I got a MacBook back in May.
Oh, like me, you were an original MacBook buyer.
I was very excited when I first got MacBook.
Have you had problems with it?
Yes. That's why I'm calling.
A lot of these MacBooks have gone back with problems. People were complaining that they were making mooing sounds. They were rebooting because of overheating.
My problem was when I went on the internet. It would crash, it would die. The whole computer would just completely die every time I would go on the internet. And I kept bringing it up to Apple, and they said, we'll bring it in, and we'll have it for like a week or whatever, and we'll check it out and see what the problem is.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, I don't want to be without my computer for a week.
Right.
Well, I went the whole summer without my computer, trying to figure out what was wrong.
Did you ever bring it to them? Did you bring it to them?
No, I never actually brought it to them because I was too busy trying to back up my files so I wouldn't lose everything.
No, don't worry about it. It's unlike Windows. A reinstall is not going to require you to erase your hard drive or damage your data.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
This is almost certainly a software issue, not a hardware issue.
Well, what happened was last month they actually came out with an update that fixed that problem.
Oh, good.
But now I have another problem that I was having before, but now it's just gotten worse.
What is that?
I had put on like I'd put about 1,500 pictures, photos in.
Yeah.
It's slow. It's like to a crawl.
You're talking about iPhoto being slow?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's just, my computer is just not. It's just not going very fast, and I don't know if I need to install memory.
How much RAM do you have?
I was afraid you were going to ask that.
You probably have 512. That's what they come with, is 512. More memory would absolutely help. iPhoto.
Why do I have to do this? I just bought this MacBook.
Well,
it wasn't cheap.
I understand.
I
don't know. I mean, 1,500 photos is not that many photos. I run many, many more photos on my MacBook. I don't find it slow. I think maybe it sounds like maybe you have an issue in general with the operating system. I would, you know, you've got the disk that it installs the operating system. I would reinstall the operating system. When you do that, there's an option to archive and install, which archives the old operating system. This won't touch your data, won't touch your photos. Archives your old operating system and installs a fresh copy. I'm thinking from day one that was the problem. And I would reinstall the operating system. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 1129, Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
KFI On Demand, the shows you want when you want them. KFI, AM640.com.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. It's 11:38, and we're talking high tech today, and I'm glad you're here with me. Let's get back to the phones and Janice in Rancho Cucamonga. Hello, Janice. Welcome to KFI.
Hello. I can barely hear you.
I'll talk up.
Okay. I'd like to video conference with my son in Connecticut, and I live in California because there are grandchildren there.
Oh, isn't that nice?
I want to see them.
Yeah, of course you do.
And I want it for free.
Of course you do. And guess what? You can.
Okay.
Do you have high-speed internet?
Yes, I do.
And they have high-speed internet?
Yes, they do.
All right. The easiest way to do this now, and there are a number of ways to do it. You can do it with your chat client. If you're using Macs, you can do it with iChat. But the easiest, the best, the free way to do it, and I love it, is Skype.
Skype?
Skype. SKYPE.com. And the new Skype with video works on Macs and PCs. Gives you video, gives you audio. It's absolutely free. You both have to be using Skype on both ends.
Okay.
And you both have to sign up for a free Skype account. And you'll need to give them your Skype handle. It's just like any chat client, except that Skype is really a voice over internet product. It was originally designed for making audio calls. Incredible quality. I mean, really much better than phone quality. And then in their most recent version in Skype 2, they've added video. And it just is great. And one of the reasons I really like it is that almost all the other ways to do video have problems with routers, and they have problems with firewalls. You have to do special shenanigans to get it around the router and firewall. Skype doesn't. It does something called NAT traversal, which means you don't need to know what that is, Janice, what it means is it just works, and I really like it for that reason. I have to say they have consistently improved their product, and it's owned by eBay now. eBay bought it, and they paid $3.5 billion for Skype, and it's still free. I don't understand how they plan to make money on it, but I highly recommend it. SKYPE.com. And now that Skype 2 is out for Mac, it means that Macs and PCs can talk together. Video conference. If you're a Mac user and you've been using iChat, try Skype. It's better. It's much better, and it's great on Windows. In fact, the beta version 3 is now out for Windows. I haven't tried it. I'm very happy with 2. It also has until the end of the year, you can call any phone, not just a computer, but you can call any phone. Not this won't do video, but you can call any phone via audio. They call that Skype out. So you're on your computer, you're talking to, you could talk to, of course, any other computer running Skype, but now you can call any phone in the U.S. and Canada for free, which is pretty cool. One thing I do recommend, if you're going to use Skype or any, if you're going to use any of these video or even audio chats, people are tempted. They say, well, I've got a, if you're using a laptop or you've got a desktop with a microphone, I'm all, I got a built-in microphone, I got my speakers, that's good, right? No. You really want to get a headset. A headset is earphones with a microphone. And I strongly recommend spending a little bit extra and getting a USB headset. Not one that plugs into your sound card, but one that plugs into your USB port. I like very much the Plantronics DSP line. Plantronics DSP. The DSP-400 folds up. The DSP-500 doesn't. Very good microphones. Very good quality. And because you're not using the sound card, there's no buzz, no hum, no interference. And the reason you really want to do this, first of all, the microphones are better. They're much better than anything on your laptop or any desktop microphone you might have, any cheapo microphone you might have gotten with your computer. But also, because you're wearing headphones, you don't get echo coming from the speakers. And this is a very common problem when people are using voice chat or even video chat programs. The speakers will come back into the microphone, right? And because there is delay in all of these, all of them has some delay. You're using the internet, so there might be as much as half a second delay. It's really confusing. You'll hear your voice back half a second later coming back through the microphone, and it just is, it'll make you nuts. It's like Lou Gehrig, you know, today, I consider, it's just no good. It's actually worse than that. So get it, spend a little money on a headset, $30-$40. Get your grandkids to do the same. They need a camera. Obviously, you need a camera. There are lots of good choices out there for cameras. Again, they'll have built-in microphones, but I don't recommend using them. I guess if you wanted to use the microphone built into the camera, if you say got the Logitech camera, Logitech makes really good, inexpensive cameras. The one I'm recommending right now, we just did a bit on it on my gadget podcast, the Daily Gizwiz, is the QuickCam Ultra. Or I guess Ultra Vision. It has a microphone built into it. It's a very good camera with glass lens. I mean, it's $100, $129, but it's a good camera. If you have a DV camcorder and the right drivers, you can use that. But, you know, generally a computer camera, USB camera is easier to get working. It has a built-in mic. You could use that. That would work fine, but you just need to then put in headphones on. You don't want to have open speakers. You need to use headphones. So if you want to say, you know, if you want to get the camera and get a microphone, the QuickCam Ultra Vision, pretty good. Actually, very good camera. Has a built-in microphone. You'll want to get fairly close to it because it's going to pick up everything going on in the room, too. It'll be a little noisy, but it's not bad. And then you absolutely want to wear headphones. Earbuds, you know, the iPod earbuds, those will be fine. I tell you, folks, if you haven't tried it, it's a revolution. It really is. Ruth Banning, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Ruth.
Hi, Leo. My problem is, to make it quick and understandable, I have an Aptiva with Windows 98. My brother gave me about a year ago a Dell 8400 with XP, and I have got everything on it to work except one program, and I have to figure out some way to
it
get
won't
that
work.
Program.
What is the program?
Corel Draw 8.
All right, that's pretty recent. That's not an ancient program.
Well, they told me it wasn't going to work on here.
Ah.
It's actually, it's Photo Paint, and what happens is I installed it because I actually bought the program. It's licensed.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I installed it, and I can use it, but invariably, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, sometimes 1 minute, the whole program freezes.
Yeah. And you called them and they said it doesn't work on XP? Is that what they said?
Well, that's what they said. So I paid for the upgrade. The problem is it is so different. I can't spend another year learning a program. So I'm trying to figure out my options.
You know, if it doesn't work with XP, there's nothing you can do. It's not going to work with XP.
Well, but when I go on the web to check, other people are saying they're using it with XP. So I was wondering, is there a way to, like, slave my other drive so that's the only thing on it?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the operating system you're running it under. Is it PhotoPaint 8 or PhotoPaint 9?
It's PhotoPaint 8. It's 8.369.
And when you asked Corel, they said, no, it does not work with XP?
Well, that's what they said, but I thought that was to get me to buy the upgrade, because when I'm on the web, other people are telling me they're using it with XP.
Uh-huh. Well, it could be. It works. Did you ask them how they got it working with XP?
Well, I'm just reading posts on forums. I don't go to chat rooms and things. So.
Well, you can ask them on the forum. You don't have to go to a chat room to do that. Just post another post on the forum saying, hey, that's cool. I've got PhotoPaint 8. It doesn't work. It crashes after a while.
Okay.
You have the install disk, I take it?
Yes, I do.
And so you did a fresh install of PhotoPaint 8 on XP?
Yes, I did, but then I had to do the update because the install disk is actually for 8.2 something, and then there are updates, which I also have those
good
files.
Yeah, you want to do that. You want to make sure that it updates all the patches and everything.
Right.
I'm reading now in the Corel alt.corel.graphics newsgroups. And as you say, there are people who are able to use it. One issue, according to this, is incompatibility with the NVIDIA graphics card.
Okay, how do I find out if that's what's on here?
Okay, well, that's easy enough. You right-click on My Computer.
Okay, got it.
And you're going to select Properties, and you're going to click the Hardware tab.
Right,
and
hardware.
Then,
okay,
yeah, and then click the device manager, and you'll
device manager.
Under there, you'll see an entry for display adapters. It'll tell you, click
got
the,
it.
What kind of this?
Radon X300 series.
Oh, that's good. That's an ATI, so that's not a problem. I mean, that's not the problem. Anyway, that was a known problem, apparently.
You know, NVIDIA, I know that name. I recognize that name, so I think it's someplace.
Well, apparently, the NVIDIA graphics card and the NView software have compatibility issues with CorelDRAW,
okay.
Corel PhotoPaint 8. That's the problem. Can we trust the company when they say it doesn't work?
It cost me $200 to get the upgrade.
And you really hate the upgrade. You don't want to spend any time with it, huh?
It's like a different program.
It is. In fact, it is a different program.
Yeah.
They discontinued PhotoPaint.
It took me a year to learn the parts of PhotoPaint I needed.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, your other alternative is to install Windows 98 on that new Dell. You don't want to do that either.
I do that. I have that disk, actually.
Well, that's another option. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. If the company says it doesn't work on XP, that means at the very least, they know of compatibility issues. Obviously, some people have managed to get it working. But if they're not going to support it on XP, you're going to have issues no matter what. So you have a couple of choices. Use a newer program that works with XP or use an older operating system, Windows 98. I don't know what else to tell you. This is that compatibility issue. And you can see now why at the very beginning of this hour, I was talking about this, why Microsoft is so reluctant to make substantial changes to the operating system. Because then you got a lot of people like Ruth saying, but my old software won't work. If it's not supported by the operating system, if Corel says it doesn't work on the operating system, I think you're kind of out of luck. I'll be honest with you. I'll keep looking and see if there is some magic button you can press to make it work, but I don't have high hopes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:49.
Bill Handel.
Now, they won't tell you we want illegals to vote. They just say any attempt to curtail illegals from voting, in fact, is an attempt to curtail legal Latinos from voting.
Bill Handel.
That's what it's about, you racist, you.
Tomorrow, 5 to 9 on AM 640. Online and on demand. KFIAM640.com.
You know, I love it. We have people all over the country listening to this show via the internet. Of course, they have high-speed internet. We have people all over the country, like our last caller, who want to do phone, video conferencing. Of course, they have high-speed internet. People downloading music, watching video. It's really amazing what's going on. Of course, you have to have high-speed internet. You don't have high-speed internet, you're kind of being left out. Would you like to join the 21st century? It's easy. And it's not expensive with DSL Extreme. DSL Extreme, you've heard me talk about them. They're my internet service provider. I've been so happy with them over the past 3 years, and I encourage you to give them a try. $14.95 a month. That's all it costs to go high speed. The single most important upgrade you can make to your computer. And if you're paying more than $14.95 a month, maybe you want to consider DSL Extreme. An independent internet service provider is the best way to go. I've said this for years. They care about you. They work to keep you happy. There's no extra services you have to buy. There's no additional charge for the modem. There's no setup fee. There's no support tech support fee. It's just $14.95 a month. There are geographic restrictions, but that's not their fault. That's the phone companies. They don't like this price. I don't blame them. It's too good. Call 866 the number 2 GetNet to get DSL Extreme right now. 866-2 GETNET or visit them online at dslextreme.com. High speed internet for $14.95 a month. Where else? My internet service provider should be your internet service provider. DSL Extreme. Call 866-2 GetNet to get DSL Extreme.
America's Anchorman, Rush Limbaugh, tomorrow 9 to noon.
KFI, AM 640.
11:56, a KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy on KFI. So glad to have you aboard today. 1-800-520-1KFI, that's my phone number, 1-800-520-1534. Ray in Riverside, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Ray.
Great. Listen, I enjoyed that recommendation. I bought that Panasonic Tough Book.
Oh yeah, have you been tough on it?
Oh, tough. But as a service person, and I'm sure a lot of people out there like to know it too, including myself, but we'd like to start printing out our invoices in our service truck, but being it's well, you know, you got a lot of dust and dirt and environment
right
in a truck, and I'm wondering what kind of computer, printer.
You know, I don't think
that would be safe.
Is it really that dirty in the truck?
No, but once in a while it can be. There'll be some dust flying around. And,
you know, I think any inkjet will be fine. You want an inkjet where you replace the head when you replace the ink. By doing that, you're going to have a fresh print head as well as, I mean, basically, those kinds of inkjets, and I'll see if I can find a couple of recommendations for you. Basically, the printer itself is just a holder with a little bit of circuitry. All the work is being done in the print head.
So we should have a, maybe inside of a type of a sealed box, some type that we just lift
I wouldn't even worry about that. I think that if you get some dust in there and it starts to print funny, you know, open the thing up, take the cartridge out, dust the inside of the thing, and replace the cartridge if it's not working right.
We'd like to have a small one naturally because room is at a premium.
Well, they're very light these days. I don't know about small. You know, this was a very popular category for a while is these tiny little printer, portable printers, and a lot of companies made these. And I don't, you know, I'm curious to see if they still make them. Let me just go over to PCMag.com where they have these great printer rundowns of every kind of printer you'd ever want. See if they still make these little portable printers. I'm sure somebody does. They're very tiny. Some of them were even battery powered. Let me look. I'll tell you, we got a break for news anyway. Let me look and see if I can find something for you, and I'll talk about it after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 11:59, Steve Gregory's in the KFI News Center.
November 12th, 2006.
Today, mostly sunny with highs ranging from the low 70s along the coast to the low 80s in metro LA and Orange County, mid 80s in the valleys. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 12:06, I'm Steve Gregory, KFI News.
Thank you, Steve. 12:06. Well, it's KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's time for me, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. We talk high tech every Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2. High tech means anything with a chip in it. Computers, cell phones, camcorders, PDAs, MP3 players, home theater. Just to follow up with Ray, who was looking for a portable printer to put in his truck. He wanted something that would be kind of dust resistant, but easy to carry around. And after shopping around, looking for him online, I think it's pretty clear that the best bet for you, Ray, would be the Canon, the Pixma IP90. It's a portable printer. Now, one of the things I like about this is you close it up. First of all, it's small. It's less than the size of a laptop. It's fast, which, in fact, it's faster than almost any portable printer out there. It does color. It is inkjet. When you close it up, you're effectively sealing it up. I mean, if you really want to be good, you could put it in a Ziploc bag. But the nice thing about this is it closes up. And all these portable printers will do this to some extent. So I think perfectly good in a dirty, dusty environment. You're going to probably want to get the $100 battery, which is going to put this thing over $300. It does have a car power adapter, so you can run it off the car juice as well. Put a link in the show notes to a PC World review from last year. This definitely, I would say definitely, is the one for you. I've been very happy with the Canon Pixma line in general. They do very good color reproduction. You can do photos with this. Portable is going to cost you a little bit more. But this is a very good printer. And I think a good choice for a kind of a less than ideal environment, shall we say. Now, I mentioned last hour I was going to talk about the new T-Mobile phone, the Dash. This is one that's been pretty hotly awaited. A very hot category right now, these smartphones. Basically, the idea is replace your PDA with a cell phone. Windows Mobile, Palm are the two different choices for operating systems. Somewhat behind in third place, the Symbian. And Nokia has its own operating system. I have not been a fan of Windows Mobile 5, mostly because, like, it's Windows. You have to, you know, it's got a start button. It takes three or four clicks to do almost anything. On the other hand, it seems like right now the most interesting phones like the Motorola Q, the Trio 700W, and this, the Dash, are all running Windows Mobile 5. The Dash is made by a company called HTC that is worth watching. They have done some really interesting phones. Taiwanese company. This is clearly aimed at the Q or the Trio. It's thinner and lighter than the Q and the Trio. Has that nice, this new, I'm seeing this everywhere. The Zune has it, this has it, this new rubberized plastic that gives it a nice feel. It's not slick like plastic. It holds well in your hand. It's easy to use as a phone. It looks a lot like a BlackBerry. It's got a full keyboard on it, just like the Trio and just like the Q. I think very usable buttons and keys. Excellent phone quality, I have to say. Of all of them, you know, the Q does not have great phone quality. I would say this is the best phone quality of the three I've tried. The Trio is pretty good. This is very, very good. Good little megapixel camera, 1.3 megapixel camera. Gives you pretty good results. Not great. It's not going to replace your regular digital camera. It's got Windows Media Player, so you can play sounds back. It uses this new little tiny little SD, the micro SD card, so you can add more memory. It has a lot of memory in it, though. I haven't run short of memory. I've been able to do a lot of photography, even put my own ringtones on there. That's another nice thing about this. T-Mobile has not locked this down. You can use it like a real computer. You can put your own MP3s on it and make them ringtones. You can put your own pictures on it. Bluetooth works fine, even for data. I've become more and more of a T-Mobile fan in terms of their phones. They really seem to have a great variety of phones. If the connectivity will work for you where you are, and I know they're not perfect throughout all of Southern California, T-Mobile's a good choice. I believe they bought the Singular network when Singular merged with AT&T, so they have, I think, better connectivity than they used to have. I've had no problem in Northern California, in Toronto. I took it on the cruise, and it's been very good, even internationally. It's a quad-band phone and works very well, I think. So, if you're looking for a smartphone, I have to say I'm impressed with the Dash. It's too bad Windows Mobile 5. I wish they'd done a better job with that. And, you know, Sony just bought Symbian. Sony Ericsson just bought the Symbian, folks. And I've always liked Symbian. Symbian's the old Scion operating system. And I'm hopeful that they'll make some good smartphones based on Symbian. And that might be a really compelling choice. And, of course, the rumors are, and they're pretty credible at this point, Apple is going to announce an iPhone in January. The rumors are pretty credible that they will do two phones, a small, thin one, and a smartphone. iPod-like. Will it be a great phone? It's Apple's first attempt in this market. I don't know. And the question is, what carrier is Apple going to use? Some people say Singular. I've heard some say T-Mobile. This will be very interesting. I think they're competing between Singular and T-Mobile. I think those will be the choices, mostly because they want one that will work internationally. And GSM seems the best choice for that. It might be the time to wait. Let's go to Troy, New York, and say hi to John. Hello, John. Welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo. Leo, are you there?
Nowhere else, my friend. I am here. What can I do for you?
Okay, good. I'm sorry. I'm used to hearing the radio, and I didn't.
It does a weird thing when I pick you up, and I know that throws people sometimes. It goes, poong, and then I get very quiet. But I'm still here.
Yes.
I'll shout.
Okay, great.
It's a long way to Troy. What can I do for you?
It's not that long away to Troy, Leo. What I have a problem with is I just installed Nod 32 because I've been shopping around for different antiviruses.
Good. And you did the free trial, I hope?
Yeah, I tried a couple of different ones before that. I was doing AVG for a long time, and then a while back, apparently, I caught a bug that AVG didn't find.
Ooh.
And someone on the chat site actually told me to try, Antivir. So I tried that.
That's another freebie, yep.
Yeah, and then I got tired of all the pop-ups from that thing. Every time I boot up the machine, there's another reason why I should buy the new
Well, think about it. Why would they give you a free antivirus except to try to upsell you, right?
Well, that's true. And then I tried Avast for a while, but the thing about that is it takes over a day to do a complete scan of my computer.
Yeah, it's very slow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I figured I'd try Nod 32.
You know, you get what you paid for. I mean, I think really a paid antivirus, they're not that expensive. You avoid all of these little issues, and you get a better quality product. Although, I'll tell you, I'd rather use the free antivirus than use something like Norton or McAfee. I don't think either of those are very good. So
well,
what was your experience
with... I had that for a long time, and it slowed down my system.
That's terrible. It's like it's a pig, yeah. So what's been your experience with Nod 32?
Very brief, actually. I just installed the trial version today after uninstalling Avast, of course, because I know I can't have two antivirus running at the same time.
Jerome has learned that in spades, I believe, yes.
Yeah. And it seemed to have, well, I did a complete scan, which was great. It took about 13 minutes instead of the over a day.
That's a big difference, yeah.
So I was happy with that. The problem I have is it seems to have broken my anti-spam. I'm using Spam Subtract from Intermute, and they got bought out by Trend Micro. And I figured, okay, if it doesn't work, I'll just uninstall it, reinstall it. And I couldn't find a site to, unfortunately, I don't have the .exe files still on my computer. So I couldn't find a site to reinstall it from.
Yeah, well, did Trend kill Spam Subtract, or are they still selling it, or what are they doing with it?
They killed it. They replaced it with their own stuff.
So they want you to use PC Cillin instead.
Right.
I see.
And so the problem is, Nod 32, once I started that up, Spam Subtract looks for email accounts, and it does something with IMAPI. IMAPI. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right.
Yep.
But anyway, once I put in Nod 32, it says, close all my email clients, which they're all closed up because I just started the machine.
Oh, it sees Spam Subtract as an email client, which I'm not familiar with Spam Subtract. It sounds like it is an email client. It downloads the mail, filters it, and then moves it on into your email. So you would need to disable Spam Subtract somehow. Because Nod 32, as with most antiviruses, Nod 32 goes through your email. So, and not for spam. It's looking for email viruses. Can you try it without the email? I guess you probably...
Yeah, I disabled that component.
Okay.
And it didn't seem to make any difference.
Yeah, because it still has to install, and it can't install as long as spam subtract is running.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what I could do is maybe reboot in safe mode and then install.
Yeah, that should work. You don't want to uninstall spam subtract, then reinstall it?
Well, I can't because I don't have the EXE file anymore. I don't know what I did with it, and I can't find it, and it's not available anymore.
Well,
I got it.
All I could say is good luck. I mean, this is the second call we have with somebody who's using a discontinued product. Once they discontinue these, I mean, I feel for you, but once a product is discontinued, you're kind of out of luck. They're not going to continue to update it. They're not going to make it work with modern operating systems or other programs. If you don't even have the uninstaller, I don't know what you're going to do. I mean, be honest with you. If you have a reinstaller, I don't know what you're going to do. You have programs that conflict because they're both trying to do the same thing. You're going to have a similar problem, I think, with most antiviruses. I would say it's time to get a new spam filter. One I recommend and I really like, and it doesn't do the same thing. It filters the spam before it comes to you, is only myemail.com. Now, the disadvantage is you pay a monthly fee. You don't just buy it once. But I think you want that with spam filtering because you want it to be constantly updated. Spam's changing all the time. Only myemail.com. And this won't conflict with anything on your system because it doesn't run on your system. Your email goes through their system. They filter it out. You don't even download the spam, which I like. That might be I would just say uninstall spam subtract. It's out of date. They don't make it anymore, and they haven't updated it in over a year. And use something more modern. And I would recommend only my email. If you want something free, Inboxer is a good choice. That's a Bayesian filter. But I think the best way to get rid of spam is before it even reaches you. I use server-side filtering, and I highly recommend that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1219.
The KFI News team works weekends. KFI News, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1226, phone number is 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. Dave in Valencia, welcome to KFI.
Leo, you got so quiet there.
I know, everybody's complaining about my quietude. I don't know how to fix it. Nothing I can do about it. I'll just shout.
Okay, that's working.
All right.
Listen, I do 3D graphics and animation stuff out of my house. I got several machines, and I'm always buying the next big beast. And this time I decided I was going to take the plunge and go with XP 64-bit.
Oh, boy. You big mistake.
Uh-huh.
Big mistake.
So, because it doesn't work with my wireless router, I guess Netgear has no intention of making a 64-bit driver.
Right.
I decided I'd give it its own DSL Extreme line, which I had put in, and that seems to work fine. I can open up a connection and see that it's there and everything. But for some reason, browser, email, Outlook, Internet Explorer just doesn't see it. And the guys...
All right, let me kind of understand what you're doing here. So this special super-duper 64-bit computer is not on your network.
Right.
It's just hooked up directly to the DSL Extreme modem.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know that in your network settings, you have to set it up properly, and you have to use the DSL Extreme dialer. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I went through everything with them.
And they've got the dialer working, and it's making...
Yeah.
All right.
And you can go in a command shell and look at the IP config, and everything's the way it ought to be.
Oh, all right. But your browser doesn't work.
Nope. It just... won't open anything. The guy that built this thing for me put Avast on there. I've never heard of that before.
It's a free antivirus. It's fine.
I went in there and I turned all that off, all their firewall stuff off. I turned off Windows Firewall.
One thing you want to do is go into the browser. You're using Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
You're probably using 7, right?
Yeah, I think so. Whatever comes with XP Pro.
Well, it doesn't come with it, but it is an update.
I'd love to update it, but I can't get online.
Yeah. Well, you're probably using 6 then. So you want to go to your internet properties. And what you want to make sure is that the browser isn't... let me see. Actually, maybe it's in the browser. You want to make sure that the browser is not trying to find its own settings. It's not using a proxy server. And you don't have that box checked that says detect settings.
Right.
Because
no, actually, that stuff's all turned off.
All turned off.
Yeah. That's why this is such a stymie.
Well, this is, you know, I talked about 64-bit Windows. I was talking about Vista, but it's the same problem with XP 64-bit Windows at the beginning of the show. Huge compatibility issues. It's more secure, but it's not working. In fact, anybody who buys 64 at this point is going to be going through these kinds of things. I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. If it's all working right, it's just your browser's not working right, I have no solution for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. 1229, Steve Gregory's in the KFI News Center.
Dr. Dean Adel, this afternoon at 2.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI. Andy's been hanging on for a long time in Anaheim. You're very patient, Andy. Welcome to KFI.
Hey, thanks very much. I bought a Samsung 20-inch wide flat screen.
Yeah.
And the text on it looks awful. I loaded the driver that came with it, and
is it a TV or is it a monitor?
It's a monitor. It's a SyncMaster 204.
Okay. And so the key is that you have to run at the native resolution for an LCD.
Right, and it keeps telling me that it's not running at 1680 by 1050, but I can't set the resolution to 1680 by 1050.
Okay. So I can help you here. So first of all, what you have to understand is LCDs have a native resolution. They actually have dots. There's a little LCD, a little liquid crystal, for each dot on the screen. And so there is a native number of, you know, pixels, horizontal and vertical, that it will run at. Anything else, it's this text is not going to look as good. Now, they try to anti-alias, and they have lots of circuitry to make it look a little bit better, but the truth is you're never going to get crisp text, especially at smaller type sizes, unless you run at native resolution. So okay, you have to figure out a way to get the desktop settings. You're in Windows?
Right.
And you have to get that settings tab to say whatever it was, 1680 by 1250 or whatever it is.
Right.
Now, go back to that display properties control panel in the settings tab and click the advanced button there.
Okay, I'm there.
And you've got to make sure that you've got the right monitor type. So under monitor type, is it the actual SyncMaster that you have?
Yeah, it says SyncMaster 205BW/204BW, SyncMaster Magic, blah, blah, blah.
That driver, and it's actually just a text file, is what tells Windows what resolutions are available.
Okay.
So if you have a bad driver or an incorrect driver, frequently this happens because somebody will just have the, you know, it says generic plug-and-play monitor or something like that. It won't have all the settings that you need. Mm-hmm. It may be that you either have a munged driver or an out-of-date driver. What I would do is go to the Samsung site and get the latest driver for that monitor.
I actually called Samsung, and they said, you know, you need to set this to 1680 by 1050, and I said, I can't. I loaded the driver that came with the monitor, and, you know, they said, well, sorry, you're going to have to check with your PC manufacturer for the correct driver.
No, you get it from Samsung. I'm sure it's on the Samsung site.
Okay, I'll try it one more
or just
time.
Do a Google search for that brand and that model number.
Okay. So
in worst case, you could actually go into the driver and hand edit it, but you got to be careful. You got to know what you're doing, but you want to make sure that, you know, so when you go to settings in the appearance tab, the screen resolution that's available to you does not include the setting that you want it to be.
Right. Right now, the maximum on this display is 14 by 1050.
Ah,
I need 1680
okay.
by 1050.
Well, that may be a limit of your. That may. That's probably a limitation of your video card then.
I don't know, because when I had the I had it hooked up to an LCD and I could crank it up well beyond that into the 2000.
Oh, all right. What kind of video card do you have?
It is a... mobility radon.
Radon?
X300.
That should be... it's not very recent, but it should be recent enough to give you that resolution. I mean, that there's two things that tell you what resolutions you can achieve. One is the video card, and that's really a factor of the amount of video RAM, of memory in that. And the other is the driver for your display, what your display is capable of. And
right, and that's what I was surprised that it's a brand new monitor. It came with a driver.
Well, it's far from a brand new video card.
Right.
So it maybe it's time to suspect the video card. Let me just look here. I'm looking at the X300 specifications. Now, do you know if you have 64K of megs of memory or 128 megs of memory? I bet you have 64. It may merely be that you don't have enough memory for it. Let's see here. Resolutions. Yeah, it does support a higher resolution.
Actually, it is 60. Yeah, it is 64.
Yeah, it does support a higher resolution, but it doesn't say specifically the resolution. What was the resolution? 16?
1680 by 1050 is what the monitor wants.
It's kind of an oddball resolution. It's because you have a wide aspect ratio.
Right, and I think that's what's throwing everything off.
It might well be. It might be that the video card doesn't handle that.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Wow is right. Okay. You don't have to spend a lot of money to get a video card that will handle it. I mean, this is a fairly old card. I know it's hard to believe. It isn't that old. It's a couple of years old. But it may just merely be that it just can't support it. I'm looking at the specs. You know, ATI is now owned by AMD. I'm looking at the Radeon X300 specs here. It does not mention that particular resolution. In fact, it says 16:9 aspect ratio monitors, which is what you have, are supported only at 1920 and 848. So now that says on Windows XP and Windows 2000. I think that's probably why Samsung threw it back in your court or the PC manufacturer's court. I think that you just don't have the hardware that can support that. So now what you need to do is you need to go online and you look for a video card that will support that resolution of your monitor. This is something I think people often don't think about when they buy a new monitor. I mean, that's a nice monitor. It's a beautiful monitor. But you got to have the hardware to support it. And in this case, it's kind of a weird one because, yes, your monitor will support, or your video card will support 2048 by 1536, what sounds like a much higher resolution. But it doesn't, in hardware, support the resolution that you need to have for that Samsung. And that's why the Samsung looks so bad. Luke in Corona, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Luke.
Hey, Leo.
How are you today?
Hey, good.
What can I do for you?
Well, me and my friend, we both have Macs. And we play over Game Ranger, which is an online service that eliminates the IP distributing process.
Right.
And for some reason, ever since my friend got a new ISP, we can't connect to each other's games anymore.
I'm betting the ISP is doing something about that there, maybe blocking some ports.
Really?
Yeah, I wonder. That's interesting. So just when he changed the ISP, huh? Everything else works okay for him?
Well, yeah, because like, he can host with other people. He can host games and people join his. I can host games and people join mine. But he just can't play with me, and I just can't play with him.
So even if he's hosting or you're hosting, you guys can't connect the two of you?
Right.
Interesting. But it does work for other people. So that probably isn't the ISP then.
Yeah.
Huh, that's interesting.
I've tried port forwarding, and it doesn't work either.
But you work perfectly. You can host or have other people host, and it works fine.
Yeah.
He can host or have other people host, and it works fine.
Yeah.
On the same game.
Yeah. But we can't join each other's.
That's just bizarre. I don't know. I don't know how Game Ranger works. It may be a Game Ranger issue. You might want to check on their site and see if they have.
Well, we've tried like direct connection.
Oh, and how does that work?
And that doesn't work either.
So you do not see him when he's hosting?
Well, like, I see his game. And
oh, you
he'll
do?
Start it.
Ah.
He'll start it, and then it'll say, like, could not join game.
Okay.
And then we tried the IP joining, and it still didn't work.
Okay, interesting. So you can see him.
Yeah.
But you just can't join.
Right.
No idea. Luke, that's really weird, because...
this is the second time I've called you up.
I know, I'm a loser for you, Luke. Well, you know why, Luke? Because you have real problems. You call in with real tough ones. I'm thinking it probably uses different ports to play the game than it does to see the server. In fact, it probably uses a standard port 80 to see the server. That's why you can get through. And there's something going on with that other port. What ports? What game are you playing, first of all?
Well, I play about five. There's like Clone Campaigns, Age of Empires.
None of these work.
None of these work. And the only time we can play is if he comes over and we play over local area network.
But. All right, I'm going to recommend something called Hamachi. Have you heard of Hamachi?
No.
Hamachi is going to, it may be the way to solve this. A lot of gamers use it. What Hamachi does, is very easy to set up, is it sets up, basically makes him and you, now I'm starting to talk like a 13-year-old, it makes you and him, why is it, you know, my kids do this too. Me and my friend, me and Joe, don't they teach you in school it's Joe and me or Joe and I? That Joe comes first? Anyway, I'm sorry, you got me off.
Most kids out of the classroom don't really care about that.
They don't care, do they? They're too busy. At least you're learning some history with Age of Empires. So the idea of Hamachi is it makes your friend look like he's on your network, like you're on a local area network.
Okay.
And it totally solves this. A lot of gamers use it because basically you don't even need to have an internet-aware game to play together. You just run Hamachi. Now, you're a smart guy, so you're going to be able to figure this out.
Okay.
It does require a download on both sides. Oh, you're on Macs.
Yeah.
Shoot, I don't know if Hamachi...
Oh, that was PC?
I think it's PC only. Darn nation. It's a great solution. They have it for Linux. No, they have it for OS X. They do. They say it's a fairly rudimentary version, but it will work. It does work on Windows and Linux as well. And what happens with this? Log Me In just bought this company. It's very clever. It's free, by the way. What happens is both of you will log into the central Hamachi server, but eventually what will happen is it'll look like he's on a Bonjour network. He's on a local area network, and it'll make it so easy. And it goes around routers. It goes around all those problems.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, a lot of gamers use this, and I think, frankly, it's better than Game Ranger. It'll solve this problem entirely.
Cool.
All right.
I just download that, and then
You're going to have to use your smarts, because you're going to have to read the information. But it's H-A, just like the sushi, Hamachi .cc, not .com, but .cc.
Hamachi
.cc. And you're going to download the OS X client. You're going to have to read the docs because it's kind of a little odd what it's doing. But I have faith, Luke. You're obviously very bright. You'll be able to figure this out.
Okay.
A lot of gamers, I would say several hundred thousand gamers now are using this as a way to solve this problem entirely.
Okay, cool.
All right. Hey, maybe I get a B- on this one. call me back later and tell me how it worked, or send me an email.
Okay.
All right? Thanks, Luke. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1250.
Ken Gallagher, this afternoon, 3 to 5 p.m.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. Taking your calls at 1-800-520-1KFI, 1-800-520-1534. Show notes are online. All you have to do is go to KFI's website and find my page. You'll find me under shows, and then click the official website link on my page. That'll take you to leo.am, and at leo.am you can find links to, of course, our sponsors. You can find links to the things we're talking about, to my TwitNetcast network, even to our chat room. It's kind of fun to always. We got a chat room going in the background. About 100 people in there right now, and it's always fun to see what they're talking about. Often not what I'm talking about, but also some answers. And sometimes callers go in the chat room for some further help. The link there, and thanks to DSL Extreme for providing that service, is irc.dslextreme.com. But you'll find everything at leo.am. That's kind of the locus of it. And, of course, if you're enjoying what you hear on the weekends on KFI, you know that I do have a pretty big and growing podcast network. Shows you can download for free, listen to on your computer or your portable MP3 player. It's easy to do. You just go to twit.tv. That's the Twit Netcast Network. That's where this show is podcast also. So if you miss a show, you can always hear it there. But you can also hear things like This Week in Tech, our news roundup. We have a security podcast, a Windows Vista podcast, a Mac, a couple of Mac podcasts. It's all at twit.tv. I'll be back with another hour of your calls, 1-800-520-1KFI. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. At 1259, Steve Gregory's in the KFI News Center.
November 12th, 2006.
KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 106, I'm Steve Gregory, KFI News.
Thank you, Steve. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI at 107. We've got another, that's about 53 minutes to go to talk high tech. And then it's Dr. Dina Dell this afternoon at 2 on KFI. My phone number is 1-800-520. I'm only doing this 3 years. I still haven't learned the number. 1-800-520-1KFI. That's the phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Let's see. Who's been hanging on the longest here? I think Jerry wins this prize in San Diego for the last hour. Thank you for your patience, Jerry. Welcome to KFI.
Leo, I called to thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome. What for?
You recommended a website that is a haven for struggling authors such as myself.
Ah. What would that be?
Guess what it is.
Lulu?
You got it. That's great.
Have you been using Lulu? Now let me explain what Lulu is to folks who don't know. Lulu.com. It is you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's a great place for struggling authors. In the past, there have always been what they call vanity presses, where an author, instead of going to a publisher, self-publishes. But Lulu really simplifies this. They do something called print on demand, which means you don't have to buy anything ahead of time. Often with a vanity press, it'll cost you thousands of dollars upfront fees. Lulu will print the stuff out as it's sold, so it costs you nothing up front. They do a beautiful job, and you can make a lot more money than if you go to a publisher. What kind of writing do you do, Jerry?
What I do is the things that Dr. Dina Dell would like. And since I've had a website for about 4 years, it's easy for people. You know, it makes it much easier for people to go there.
Well, that's the key, I think, with Lulu, is that you have to have some way to send people there. Now, I have to tell you, a publisher doesn't help you very much with publicity unless you're a big, big... If you're a Danielle Steele, maybe. But most of the time, you're expected to do your own publicity anyway. So you're not losing anything by not having a publisher in that regard.
That's what I found. I have a publisher that's interested, but they're taking so long that I decided to keep most of the money myself.
So tell us a little bit about the details. How big is the book?
The book is about 350 pages, okay, with the foreword by Dr. Dina Dell.
Oh, that's neat. Wow. And how much does it cost you per book, and how much do you sell it for?
It's only free. I sell it for, they determine the price. It's selling for $13.50, something like that.
All right. And how much of that does Lulu take?
50 cents a book.
What? That's all?
That's all they take.
So you're really, it's almost entirely profit. Now I got to tell you, if you go with a publisher, the way the deal works, and this is if you've got some clout, you'll get a percentage of the publisher's price that they sell it to the bookstore to, which is usually about half the cover price. So let's say you got a $25 book. The publisher's getting about $12 per book. And you, if you're lucky, will get a buck, $2 per book. You, on the other hand, you've turned this completely upside down. Somebody buys the book. They get 50 cents. You get the $13.45. That's a great deal. And how have people reacted to the quality of the book when they get it?
The quality of the book is superb.
Really?
And everyone agrees.
So is it a hardcover or a softcover?
It's a soft cover. Excellent job they do.
It's kind of neat. It's print on demand, so they have these very fast, high speed printers. And they don't print a single copy until somebody buys it, and then they print it when somebody buys it. They do hardcover. They do photo books, calendars. They'll even do CDs and DVDs. I think this is, for an author, very interesting. But again, you're losing some of the things a publisher would give you, Jerry. You're losing, nobody's doing an index for you. Nobody's doing the layout for you. Nobody's editing the book. You got to do your own editing. Make sure your spelling's correct, your grammar's
yes.
correct. But, you do your own publicity. If you've got a website already, you've got a built-in audience. I think this is actually a very good way to sell books.
I think it's the wave of the future.
I agree with you. It's what we're seeing in general with technology all around is they call it disintermediation. The middleman, who is often making most of the money, is out of the picture. Authors, radio hosts, TV hosts, journalists, painters, musicians, all are selling, instead of going through a middleman, a record company or a book publisher or a television or radio station, they're going directly to their audience. And it's a much better equation in many ways. Now, you do lose some things. I'll give you an example that I know very well, which is podcasting. Essentially, I have a radio network, a podcast network, but I don't have any promotion outside of whatever I can do. You know, I mean, it helps to have a national television show and a radio show in the number one market in the country and things like that. But you know, you've got to promote it. You've got to find an audience, get them to go there. And they have to do a little more work. Now, the nice thing about Lulu is you can sell your books on Amazon. You can sell them on your website. From the point of view of the buyer, it looks like a real book. The only place you don't get into is Barnes & Noble and Borders and the brick-and-mortar stores. If you don't think that that's important, and I tell you, in some books it's not. Computer books it's not. Specialty books it's not. It probably is important for a novel to get in a big bookstore, a real bookstore. That's probably where most novels are sold. Although, more and more, I don't remember what the percentage is, but it's a large percentage of all books are now sold online via Amazon, something like 30 or 40%, and it's growing all the time. So as the channels, and this is a part of it too, with music, for instance. Let's say you're a musician. You don't want a record company. Well, you don't need a record company anymore. You can produce the music yourself. It's not expensive anymore. Used to be that's a lot of what the record company do is pay those $100,000 bills for the studio time. You don't have to do that anymore. Radio stations get you, I mean, music labels get you radio station airplay. Maybe. certainly that they can do a better job of that than you can. So they can help you with the publicity. But mostly what they do is they get it on the shelves in the record stores. Now, do people buy in record stores still? Yeah, they do. But as more and more people buy online, that becomes less and less important. So I think we're in a very interesting transitional stage. And I think, Jerry, you're right on the leading edge. That's very exciting. What's the name of the book or the website so we can send people?
My website is called Jerry Lee Online. That's GARLEE Online.com.
GARLEE Online.com.
GARYLEE.com.
Oh, Gary Lee.
And I was struck by what you said. The computers and technology really enhance human creativity.
I agree. So it's GaryLeeOnline.com. Is that right? All right. Well, we'll give you a plug in the show notes. And, Gary, I do thank you. It says Jerry on here, but I gather it's Gary. Yeah, Gary Lee. I thank you. And Dean Adele says, read this book, I dare you. That's great. The Holistic Mystics. A satirical look at the world of the all-natural and the supernatural. Sounds very interesting. I'm just so excited about how this is happening. I just think it's great for creative types. Guy in Van Nuys, welcome, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Guy.
Hey, Leo. My Apple Works is broken.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I have the Classic 9 and then OS 10 from a few years ago.
Right.
And I went in through my, I didn't go to Classic, I was in Normal 9, and I rebuilt my desktop, went to 10, opened up Apple Works, it wouldn't work, went back to 9, rebuilt it again, And then AppleWorks worked in 9, too. And then went to 10. It hasn't worked. Now I've trashed all of my Apple. I downloaded from the disk, which was Apple, which was 6.2.2.
All right.
And I even updated the 6.2.9, and she don't work.
What happens?
It opens, kind of opens, and maybe the document will open, but the document is frozen, and I get the spinning wheels. So I have to force quit.
Is it only with that particular document, or will it work without that document? I mean, is it that document?
No, it's any AppleWorks document.
Hmm. You have the original disks, right?
Yeah.
The first thing to do when a Mac program doesn't work. Now, you said you're running this in 9, or is it OS?
No, I was in 9. I go to Final Draft in 9.
Okay, so you're gonna work in 10 most of the time here.
Yeah, all the time. Also, by the way, I shift started it, which is rebuilding the desktop in 10, I guess, and I repaired disk permissions, too.
Yeah, actually, Shift does not do the same thing in 10 that it did in 9. It does not rebuild the desktop. There is no desktop file anymore. What it does is it does kind of a safe boot. It turns off extensions.
Yeah.
I would say what you probably want to do, and this is generally the way to start in OS 10 when you're having a problem, is trashing the preference files for AppleWorks.
And where do I find that?
There are two locations. Your login has a library file in it. In your home directory, there's a library file in it.
Well, my guru and I could not find it.
Could not find the library?
In the library.
Well, you need a better guru. So you want to look. There's two places you're going to look. You're going to look in application support. There'll probably be a folder there for AppleWorks. Don't delete that, but you might want to move that. And then you also want to look in the preferences. And usually for Apple programs, the preference begins with com.apple. And then it'll say AppleWorks. So look for
com.apple.
And then AppleWorks or whatever the other program is.
Okay, so I remove them. And then what?
Then try starting the program. Often corrupted preferences will cause a program crash on startup. Now, that's one place they live. There's another place preferences live on OS X, and that is in the systems library folder. So you want to click your hard drive, the boot drive, and there's a library folder there as well. And you'll also want to look in the preferences in that folder.
Library folder.
So, yeah, there's actually three different library folders. The one you never want to modify is in the system folder. But there are two library folders you can modify. One is in your home directory, and one is in the root directory of your boot disk. And the difference is the ones in your home directory affect only you at logon, and the ones in the system library, in the root directory library of your boot disk, affect all users. Another way to kind of test to see if a program problem is local to your preferences is to have another user. In fact, it's a great idea in OS X. Anyways, to create right now, before you have a problem, create an extra user. Don't ever use it. Make an administrator user. Never use it. But when you have a problem like this, log on to that user and run the program. See if the problem persists. If the problem does not exist in this new user, then it's local to your user account. So it's almost certainly a preference file. If it happens even on this second account, then it's a global system preference file probably that's at fault. So trash those preferences. If you find an application support, you find some files in there, don't trash them, move them out of application support. Most often a program will recreate them. You might even want to throw out AppleWorks at that point, reinstall it, do the update then. And basically that's the only way to do a clean, fresh start with an OS X program. 119, I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
It's your weekend. We just make it more stimulating.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Mike in Glendale, welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Mike.
I have a DVD burner that is, I haven't used for a few months, and it's not burning, and it's not playing, and I'm laying better than even odds. It's dust on the lens.
Could be. Certainly could be. That's a problem.
So So my question is, as you go to the different stores, they have these CD or DVDs. You buy them and you put them in and you run them, and they're supposed to have little brushes or something that clean the dust off.
Right. My experience is it doesn't do a very good job, and it often just shoves the dust around. It's the kind of thing that really is best to get in there, mm-hmm. open it up, and they can certainly do that in a shop, although at this point with a DVD burners costing $30 or $40, it's probably cheaper just to buy a new one, right?
That was the point, and I wanted to try one, but if you go to like Radio Shack, they want $25 for the DVD one.
Right. I mean, how much does it cost to buy a brand new DVD burner?
Well, if I buy the CD one that's about half as much, would it work on a DVD without, I mean...
You know, why don't you try the best, you know, I don't recommend these. I haven't had good experiences with them particularly, and I don't know anybody who has. I think a better idea is to buy a bottle of or a can of compressed air.
Okay.
And just shoot it in there. Don't, you know, pump it so you don't want to get any condensation in there. So don't do a long spray. Just do short bursts. That's going to have pretty much the same effect, which is moving the dust around. But if there is dust on that lens, it'll certainly clear it off. If you could take the DVD player out, it'll be easier to get in there. The other problem is, frankly, it could be that, but it could also be so many other things. I mean, software, I hear this problem all the time. My DVD player won't burn anymore. It won't recognize. And there's all sorts of compatibility issues and driver issues and so forth.
But nothing's changed since I installed it.
Yeah, it worked fine, and then you haven't used it in a while, and all of a sudden it stopped working. That might it could well be dust. That's certainly an inexpensive way to fix it. It's going to be every bit as good as those more expensive cleaning devices.
Very good.
All right.
Thanks, Leo.
Thank you, Mike. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. It's 129.
News without the snooze. Bill Handel, tomorrow morning, 5 to 9.
KFI, AM 640.
136 on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am Leo Laporte. I'm here till 2, and Dr. Dina Dell on KFI. Let's continue on with the calls at 1-800-520-1KFI, starting with, looks like Jenny in Los Feliz. Hello, Jenny. Welcome to KFI. Let's see if I lost it. Looks like I can't click your name, Jenny. Could you pick up Jenny for me on line 5 there, Chris? Because I can't seem to. Are you there, Jenny? I've lost internet access. That's what's going on this system. Don't know what to say. Can you pick up line 5 for me, Chris? Any line at all. They seem to have wandered off in the studio. Don't know exactly what to do at this point. I guess I'll have to reboot the machine and reconnect to the internet here. Hold on just a second. We use internet technology not for the audio, but just for the call screening. The audio, believe it or not, should I tell a little trade secret here? It's via ISDN, which is the old form of high-speed access. It was limited to 128 kilobits a second, actually two 64K lines. But that's, believe it or not, that's fast enough for high-quality audio from a remote location. Whatever we do remote shows as we're doing this one. On one end, I have a special device, a hardware device called a codec. We use the Telos Zephyr codecs that compresses what I'm doing down to an AAC file. And then uses, believe it or not, only one of the two 64K lines to transfer the audio down the pipe. And I get audio back same way, over one 64K line, high quality. Then I need some way, of course, to control the call screening, and that is done over the internet. And that's a little bit more tricky. I have a fine Windows machine, which unfortunately from time to time seems to lose its network access, and that's what's happened. So I don't have any control over the calls until I can get back online. I'm rebooting the machine now. That usually fixes it. Well, while we're waiting for Windows to boot up, which shouldn't take too long, a reminder that you can get the show notes online at leo.am. That's where the show notes live. That's a wiki. I have opened comments there. We've had such a problem on the wiki with spam, and some of this spam is so awful. You know, it's porno links and you know, most of it tends to be for some reason for
I can put a drugs. Color on if
you you can't. Okay, Chris. Yeah, do we have Jenny still on line five?
Hello.
There we go. Hi, Jenny. I'm going to continue to get my system booted up. I'm glad we could get you on.
Thank you. How dare they drop you? Don't they know who they're doing with?
It's not me. It's this stupid Windows machine. I'm banging on it. I'm fine otherwise. What can I do for you, Jenny?
I'm glad I got through to you. Listen, I need your advice, but on an old equipment question.
Okay.
Back in 2000, my boss bought two lovely iMacs, one for the office. One was going to be for him. I've been using it's the Snow model, that really pretty translucent white
one. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Loved it. Still loving it.
Pretty old.
Pretty damn old, and I'm hoping that he changes it up pretty soon.
Come on, boss. Don't be such a cheapskate.
Well, yeah, but in the meantime, it turns out he never even unpacked the other one, and he just gave it to me.
Brand new.
So I've got this mint condition iMac, and what I'm trying to decide now, since I'm used to the model and I like it well enough, is it worth unpacking this thing and upgrading it or modernizing
it,
or should I just sell it?
It's not worth anything. Even if you sell it, it's probably only worth $100 or $200.
So there's no like collector's market for this.
I don't think so.
It's mint in box.
Mint. Well, you know, I would go on eBay. I would go on eBay and really sell it up. It's the Snow model.
Yeah.
I would say, let me just see iMac Snow. Let's just see if anybody's selling one of these.
Oh, that's a good idea.
$119. Buy it now. That's for a Snow model. Here's $119. Oh, here's somebody's getting $149.
Okay, well, hey, that's totally worth it. Somebody will be happy to have it, and I'll put it towards a new one.
And none of these are new. And well, wait a minute. Here's one never used.
That's mine.
Yeah, and this actually, they don't have any bids on yet. But, you know, you'll make some money on it.
Technically, it's not even worth modernizing the software, upgrading the memory, or anything like that. It's not.
It's a G3 600 megahertz.
Correct. 500, actually.
Okay.
I'm looking at the label.
And it has, what, 256 megs of RAM? You could get OS 10 on there, but it would run so slowly.
Why torture myself?
Torture yourself?
One more quick question, because you've answered that one. That's really good.
It's a shame that computers aren't like action figures where there's a...
Well, there you go. Exactly.
The collector's market, but I'm afraid not.
Here's one more quick question. Is there a site out there that describes or compares different search engines? Because I use Google because I'm lazy, but I know that different ones must have different strengths.
Absolutely.
But I don't want to have to like invent the wheel and figure them out by myself. Does anybody look at that?
Absolutely. SearchEngineWatch.com.
Perfect.
Yeah, a great site. And Danny Sullivan, who runs that, rates the search engines, talks about search engines.
That's what I needed.
Thank you so much. What you want. You're very welcome. I appreciate it. I've got control, by the way, now. The system rebooted, so sorry about that delay there. Yeah, Search Engine Watch is a very cool site. He also does. He also kind of keeps an eye on search engines and whether they're doing the right thing. I have to say, though, for a long time we would talk about, oh, yeah, use the right search engine for the right job, blah, blah, blah. Google is so good. I don't say that so much anymore. I think it's pretty much a no-brainer. Use Google. Occasionally, you know, if you're doing things like searching for somebody's email address, there'd be other engines that would be more specific. Yeah, there are some specialized searches. There's a new one, actually, Cha-Cha Search, that we're going to talk about tonight on Net at Night, which is our live internet show. Amber just discovered this. CHACHA.com, world's biggest live search site. So you can actually search with a guide, a live guide. I don't know what the plan is on this. But they've got people, live people, who are helping you search the web on this. I haven't tried it. We'll talk. I've tried a little bit, and I'm impressed with just the basic search. Cha-Cha, C-H-A-C-H-A.com. I don't know who they are. But see, there, it's not over yet. Google doesn't own everything. Jeff, Granada Hills, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Jeff. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. I upgraded from dial-up after a gazillion years to cable.
All right.
Where I am, I can't get DSL. And I still have my AOL icon, and I click on that, and I can get through the internet grand, and my wife loves it because she gets her email.
All right.
But I also have the Internet Explorer icon, and when I click on that, I open up Google, which is I have as my homepage. But anytime I try to do an action, it just freezes. And if I click the X button to click out of it, it says program not responding.
Okay, so Internet Explorer is broken.
Right.
This is like the joke where the guy goes to the doctor and says, "Doctor, it really hurts when I hit my head with a hammer." And he says, "Well, stop hitting your head with a hammer. Stop using Internet Explorer. It's not much of a solution."
That's kind of where I am. The other day I went to a page and it, I think it might have been a Microsoft page, and it took me to Explorer and it froze again. So I got out.
The only reason you really have to use Explorer, unfortunately, is for Windows Update. Can you do Windows Update?
Yes.
That works.
Yes.
I don't know exactly what's wrong. I mean, one thing you might try is updating to Internet Explorer 7. That might fix it. And that is, if you go to Windows Update, that is one of the updates you'll see there. That's pretty much going to replace all the components. So it sounds like some component of Explorer is damaged. And that's why it's hanging up. Because you can surf, you can use AOL's client, right?
AOL's working fine.
Yeah. So it's just something Internet. And AOL, by the way, uses Internet Explorer for a great deal of its web page stuff. So the fact that Update works and AOL works means there's some minor cosmetic thing wrong with Internet Explorer. Maybe upgrading to 7 will fix it.
Okay, I'm one of those people I know just enough to get into my computer to screw it up, so I didn't want to.
I don't blame
you. Clicking buttons.
Well, run Windows Update, see if that helps. Now, it may be, and I have to warn you about this. Sometimes a problem with your browser is caused by spyware. Are you pretty careful about spyware? Are you using AOL 9, the one with the anti-spyware?
Yeah, I'm using AOL 9. I have Spyware Sweeper.
All right. You're fine. You're fine.
I probably am overloaded with the...
No, that sounds good. I'm glad to hear it. So that means it's probably not spyware. Because, you know, a lot of times what spyware does is modify your browser so that you go to their sites, right? But if you don't have any spyware or viruses on there, which it sounds like you don't, it's just something gets corrupt. Sometimes that happens. And Internet Explorer 7 may well... fix it. If not, it's not the end of the world.
No, it's not. It's one of those little frustrating
things. It's
annoying. I've got the icon, and yeah, it freezes on me, and I just keep trying it, and it keeps not working, and I should probably just...
stop hitting yourself in the head with a hammer, Jeff. All right. Hey, thanks for the call. Yeah, by the way, I love Firefox, and I think for many people, just the simplest fix would not even just be give up on Internet Explorer entirely and use Firefox. Get Firefox.com. It's free. It has an advantage of being less spyware infectable. And the new 2.0 is, I think, a very good browser. Get Firefox.com. It's, you know, cost you nothing to try and download. It certainly won't hurt you to put it on your system. 147 now. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Fiercely family-friendly. Dr. Laura, tomorrow, noon to 3.
KFI, AM 640.
153, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number. Dr. Dean is coming up in just a few minutes. I'll be here till 2 and then... back again next Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Show notes are online, as I was saying earlier, at leo.am. You can also find the chat room at irc.dslextreme.com. Always a great place to hang out with our wonderful chat mods, Dan and Mike, Dustin, Illuminati, O-Wine. Let's get back to the phone and see if we get a few more calls before the end of the day. Nick, Los Angeles, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well.
Okay, my computer crashed, and I tried to, you know, boot it back up or whatever, and it keeps getting stuck on a file called driver cab.
Okay.
So I don't know what's going on.
I don't know either. I mean, that's you know, that's a system file. If it's damaged, then it's not going to boot up right. When Windows doesn't work right, there aren't that many choices that you have. Is it Windows XP?
Windows XP Home. And, oh, one more thing. I had Windows XP Pro at first. When I went to Windows XP Home, it didn't recognize the rest of my... I have a 160-gig primary hard drive. It didn't recognize the full 160-gig.
Oh,
it only recognized, like, 152 or something.
Yeah, you have to get Service Pack 2 for it to see the whole thing. Home should work, but you just need to update it.
Okay.
What I would suggest, if you haven't done an update, can you get into it enough to do an update?
Oh, no.
No, you can't even do that.
No.
At this point, you got the Windows Home disk, I presume, right?
Yeah.
What you can do a restore to try to fix it.
And did that.
You already did it?
Did that. It didn't work. I'm thinking it could be a cable. Have you known, like, cables to go bad or anything like that?
Sure. It could be a hard drive cable. Absolutely.
Okay, okay. Because they kind of have like creases in them and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Crimped cables can be a problem. If they're crimped badly enough to break a line or even make it less reliable, that could absolutely cause problems. You know, sometimes it'll work, but the drive will be very slow or it'll have trouble reading some files. That actually is a very possible symptom.
Okay, that sounds exactly right.
You know,
like
they're cheap to replace cables. It's certainly worth trying. If you have a crimped IDE cable, go out and they're a couple of bucks. Go out and get a couple new ones and see if that fixes it. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, I think you might have diagnosed your own problem there. Sally, Newport Beach, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Sally.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
What can I do for you?
I have a problem with, I have Windows XP, and I use a DSL line, and I cannot print anything when I'm on the Internet. When I'm in my programs without the Internet, it prints beautifully.
All right. But so your DSL is hooked up via, how is it hooked up to your computer, via USB?
Okay, it's got a little box. Yeah, I think it's by USB.
USB or Ethernet. It sounds like...
USB, I'm sure.
USB, all right. Sounds like you've got a conflict, which is weird. A printer is also USB, I imagine.
No, it's not.
It's not. It's a parallel printer. All right.
LPT1, yeah.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, that's pretty common. In the old days, we used to have those problems where you have what's called an interrupt conflict between the two devices. I mean, that's all I could think of.
Okay.
Fixing it, it might be a little tricky.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure exactly. Let's see. I mean... Has this always happened?
No,
it just started happening.
No, it just started happening about a month or so ago.
Let me maybe it is an interrupt conflict. I'll rack my brain and think about this one. So when you go on, as long as you're not running the browser,
right,
you can print.
Right.
But as soon as you open a browser,
yeah,
you can't print.
No, I can't print any of my emails or map directions or things like that.
See, you probably are still online. It doesn't sound like it's actually being online that's the problem.
I see.
It's having the browser open that sounds like the problem. Which is a very, be honest with you, a very strange problem.
Yes.
I'm not sure exactly how that would relate to your printing, but clearly there's a conflict of some kind between your, that's really weird, your browser and your print drivers. I guess what I would recommend is get the manufacturer of your printer and the model number. Go online and go to the manufacturer's website and download, make sure you have the latest software, they call it driver software, for that printer. There may be a bug in the printer software that causes this weird interaction. It's not that you're on. You're still online. If you have a DSL line, you surf, you close the browser, you'll still be online for another 15 minutes. You'll still have a connection. So it's not that. It's the browser itself. And I'm not sure. That's a strange thing. Although, believe me, I've seen computers do strange things. So I would say if you can, get another print driver. See if that'll fix the problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI. This is Internet Explorer Problem Day, isn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. I am done, but I'll be back next Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to talk high tech with you. Dr. Dean Adell's coming up next. Have a wonderful week, all right? On KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1:59. Steve Gregory's in the KFI News Center. Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the Internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the Audio Archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.